is Lena Live. I'm with my very special guest, Carol Roth, who is incredibly prominent in many fields in our life as a strategist, as a content producer, as a certainly brilliant politician who can conceptualize a lot of issues which has to do with the business and most important with entrepreneurship. I see that I'm competing here a little bit with the music, but I hope I made my point with Carol's equipment of being absolutely brilliant intellectual. And as I mentioned before, strategist, and in case if someone didn't hear it very well, fantastic content producer who could put together very complex deals. And we will talk about her accomplishments during the program. And I like to now to introduce Carol Roth to our discussion with certainly important points regarding her climatic expression in her book, which called The Entrepreneur Equation. Carol, we will invite you with a first question, and I will certainly thank you that with your creatively busy schedule, what would be the most challenging today for you to combine different spheres of your activities, from politics to business, entrepreneurship, into some perhaps smaller issues as a personal value and moral issues?
Well, Lena, I appreciate the great introduction, and certainly, you know, it's funny. I think in this day and age, all of those issues intersect. You know, our lives are so sort of holistic nowadays that you can't compartmentalize. You can't get away from small business without talking about politics. You can't get away from politics without talking about the economy. You can't get away from the economy without talking about entrepreneurship. So the funny thing is, while they all seem like they're separate topics, they really all intersect, and I think that they do now more than ever.
So incredibly deeply grateful that you indeed made that very important point, because we are more connected now than ever in the history of human race. We always hear words globalization, and different people understand those words and formulations in a different sense, because everyone has their own different problems, challenges, and of course cultural differences. I like to use your book as a pivotal point and a focus of orientation, where we stand with our minds in the connection with our dreams of making our business going, what you call the entrepreneur equation. I would make my modest comment reading your book, and I would say that you very powerfully and gracefully destroyed the illusion of an existing dream, and you brought very realistic, dynamic, and yet extremely detailed, truthful picture. What does it take to make business existing and then successful? And one of the moral, incredibly powerful statement I remembered expresses the thought where you're saying that you certainly can have a business or you can be entrepreneur, but it doesn't mean automatically that you should. I hope I made a proper opening to your incredibly insightful book, and I will let you to continue.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that, and I don't think anybody has ever used gracefully and I think annihilation in the same phrase to describe it before, but I think it's very accurate. And it was my intention to be extremely realistic, because you know, the idea of entrepreneurship is so important and it's so powerful, especially in the American culture and in our history and where we are going in the future. But I think that it gets very glamorized by the media. And so they tend to focus on the exceptional stories, right? They're news because you don't get to hear about them very often. They're the exceptions. But because they're always in the media, people expect them to be the rules. And so if you take a step back for a second, Lena, I think that your question about can or should, which is a central tenet in the book, is very, very important. Because when you get the idea to be an entrepreneur, it always sounds very interesting and it always sounds very sexy, and you get to say goodbye to your job and perhaps the boss you don't like and the coworkers you don't like, and you get to be out on your own. But I think a lot of people forget to really step back and think strategically, to think about what is it that I'm trying to accomplish here? What is my own definition of success? What does success mean to me in terms of dollars, in terms of lifestyle, hours work, family relationship, you know, what I'm giving back to the community? What are all these things that I'm trying to accomplish? And setting up that goal first and then measuring the business opportunity against that goal. I think that a lot of times it starts from, oh, I can make money from this, or, oh, I really have this great idea, but they don't measure it against that goal. And if you don't have that end goal, if you don't know where it is that you want to get to, it's very difficult to come up with the best path to get there. So you have to have that end goal, and you have to really look at your business opportunity and say, you know, is this something that's going to give me the best opportunity for success? Because, yes, you absolutely can do it. Anybody with a little bit of money and some moxie can go out and start a business, but it doesn't mean that it's the best opportunity for you to succeed, or that particular business opportunity is the best one for you to succeed. So I think it's very important to take some of this emotion out and really get into your head, to be strategic, to put yourself in the mindset of saying, okay, you know, from a strategic standpoint, does this make sense? And I think that that is the step that so many people forget to take until they're already in business. And then sometimes once they're in business, they forget to think about that as they make different choices for their business, as they grow or pivot their business, as they think about changing up their product and their service offering. So I think it's very, very hard sometimes when you're in the middle of it to take this emotion out. But that's really the entrepreneur equation. It is meant for you to have this critical thinking about your own goals, your own circumstances, your own objectives, not somebody else's, not someone else's definition of success, but your own, and trying to find the best path to get you there.
You raised a tremendously important issue as an advice. I'm not going to try to derail our conversation, but there is a certain amount of philosophical qualities saying that the more advice I get, the more skilled I get. And a statistic, for example, I personally take it with a tremendous skeptic, because you can get thousands of very wise advice from people who have their own journeys. And as you just said, it has to be your particular individual path, not somebody else. And it can be indeed very deceptive and very confusing. People will think, well, I did my homework, I spoke to this one, I read this book, I read this article. But to look into your own honest intellectual, educational, and financial abilities, that's something takes tremendous uncompromising honesty. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think that that's incredibly well said. And I think one of the challenges is that we're always surrounded by people who want to be supportive. So first of all, you have people who say things just because they think that it's helping you, even though being honest with you would probably be a better help. Second, unless somebody is willing to invest in your business, unless they have a vested interest, they say, you know what, that sounds so amazing, I'm willing to put my own money, or I put my own time into it, then you can't really trust their advice, right? Because they don't have a vested interest, and whatever they tell you, it doesn't really matter. If they're willing, if they're standing there with, you know, not only a ton of experience, but their own cash, then I would take their advice a little bit more seriously than somebody who's just saying something, because it doesn't matter at the end of the day what the consequences are. And then I think it's also important to surround yourself with people who will have the uncomfortable conversations with you. And sometimes that means hiring somebody, hiring a coach, hiring a strategist, hiring somebody who is not emotionally involved, doesn't have their own agenda because they're related to you or because they know something else about you that's going to skew their view of this particular situation, but somebody who can really think, help you think through these goals and help you think through what it is you're trying to accomplish and evaluate the business opportunity from that very headstrong place instead of relying on your emotion.
Carol, just measuring by time what you express, it is quite extraordinary. And I would say that reading your book was somewhat unstopping musical symphony. I felt one idea will go into the another. Sometimes those ideas are colliding, but that makes you think. So one of my points had to do with incredibly grounded qualities of your book, yet it addresses your thinking. It's almost contagious qualities, which means if you're not thinking, if you're not analyzing, you just better not even start to do something so incredibly fundamental as starting your business. And that actually related to your thought, which I personally enjoyed very much, and your recent CNN presence, where inside of just a literally few seconds, not only you exuberantly exhibit your tremendous, wonderful expressive qualities and your very attractive way of relating to the audience, but the thought was very crisp when you talked about Romney and saying that this person indeed is capable to turn around things. And you made your own suggestion, you made your own statement, and it was very clear, crisp, fireful, and very memorable. I understand that you're going to be, again, a guest of CNN tonight, you mentioned?
Yes, very late tonight. So tonight we've got the Florida primary and wrapping up, and so I will be back on with Piers Morgan on CNN very late tonight, midnight Eastern time, 11 in the Central Time Zone, and we'll be talking about the results of the primary and where the race goes from here.
Well, as you know, interest doesn't know time, and timing is the most important, and we all will be glued to the screens to hear your other points and comments. And I like to say, coming back to your book, that it is very loyal to individual dreams and individual goals. I would say it's very uncompromising, and you already expressed this in your comments. But I also would like to say that everyone with their individual specific requirements can find these very loyal answers or guidance or perhaps their own path. So in writing this book, I wanted to ask you, is any particular your own experiences or experience which finalize your advice and that clear vision?
You know, it's a really interesting question, Lena. I've had the pleasure of working with well over 1,000 entrepreneurs, evaluating lots of different businesses, raising over $1 billion in capital, and starting my own business. So I have a unique breadth and depth of experience. But the kicker, what started this off, was before any of that even happened. It was when I was growing up. My mother started what was the first gift basket company in the United States back in the early 1980s. It was a very well-known, fantastic gift basket company that she started with one of the other women who lived on the block. And it started in our basement, and they grew it out of the basement, and they grew it into a storefront with a warehouse, and they ended up working on this business. And my mom never had intended of going into business. She just had a very creative flair. And she made these gorgeous packages, and people wanted them. And so when there was demand, she started the business. But they never really put any goals in place for the business, and they never thought about what they were doing. And so they ended up working, you know, 50 hours a week, 50 weeks out of the year. And after about 10 years, they sat down to look at how much they were making, and they were probably making around $10,000 a piece, which equated to about $4 an hour. And at the time, my mom ended up divorcing my father, and her partner's husband ended up going through a bankruptcy. And then all of a sudden, these women who had gone into business based on some creative notion had to support themselves and found that the business that they had been working so hard in for 10 years wasn't going to do that for them. That basically they had created a little hobby for themselves that made a few dollars, but certainly barely even a job and definitely not a business. And so that really was something that was always in the back of my head. And as I met all of these different companies, big and small, and saw the challenges and saw the things that people were facing, you know, it just was so clear to me that so many times people took the leap before looking, and that they didn't do the preparation beforehand, that they followed their passion. And, you know, it's so funny. It reminds me very much of getting married. I know so many people who spend so much time planning the wedding, and they know exactly what linens they want to put on the table and what flowers they want to carry down the aisle and what band they want to play at the reception, but they forget about the work of the marriage, which is the happily ever after. It's the working on that relationship as a partner forever, every single day. And I think the same thing happens with the business. The people get so excited about the idea and creating the business and opening the business that they forget about the happily ever after in the business, which is executing on that business plan day in and day out and having that goal that satisfies their objectives. So I really came by this from watching my own family, a great example of what not to do, and then starting to identify these trends in a whole slew of businesses across different industries of varying sizes, and seeing that the same kinds of challenges were coming up over and over again.
Fantastic story, and certainly this panoramic experience which you had from your childhood and your maturing years probably gave a wonderful preparation for your years in Wharton School, which is, of course, a world-renowned business school. And then it's coupled with your own conceptualizing what is really life all about. And I just will make a little smaller connections and would remind to the listeners that this dilemma where the business and personal interests lie often in a conflict with each other. And being in the business artistic world, I need to say that sometimes you face with a cruel treatment when, for example, a ballet teacher would say, I will take you in my group, but with no children and with no complications from your family life. And that sounds incredibly cruel, but very honest. And I believe that honesty, which is beforehand and before something is starting, is certainly very, very welcome because it gives you opportunity to make very responsible choice. Carol, to your glossary, to bring a little serious humor to the conversation, spinach on the teeth. Can you come? Can you come
Yeah. So you know, Lena, I like to take everything. You know, even though I have a background from Wharton and, you know, this kind of nice academic background, I hate things that are academic. And I find the best way that I can relate to people is by bringing in analogies and making connections to things in their everyday life. So basically, I call my brand of tough love the spinach in your teeth advisory philosophy. And it stemmed from sitting at lunch with people, and you would eat something with spinach, maybe a spinach salad, and every single time it would get stuck in my teeth. And I would notice that there were certain people who would look at me and would never say anything. And so I would end up leaving that lunch, maybe going to an important meeting, and having spinach stuck in my teeth and looking absolutely ridiculous. And then there were a brand of people who would look at me and go, you know, Carol, you've got some spinach stuck in your teeth. You know, it looks kind of goofy. Please take it out. And so, you know, it's very interesting because really telling me that information is helpful, right? I want to have the spinach out of my teeth, but for some people, they're afraid to have the uncomfortable conversation. And so it's very much, I think, you know, kind of like the ballet example, right? The uncompromising, the telling you what you're doing wrong so that you can fix it and become better. And so my philosophy is you just never take advice from anybody who won't tell you that you have the spinach in your teeth. And so if you're in business or in life, you've got to know who those people are and surround yourself with them, because these are the people who are going to save you from doing something silly because they're willing to have the uncomfortable conversation with you.
Carol, being very presumptuous, I hope we will be able to share one time spinach salad.
Yes, we'd love to.
And share more of the truth about this. But it is so deeply important, especially in our times. I will take a little detour from your book. However, it's not really a detour because the depth and detailed description of self-analysis is so well expressed in your book that I like to make this comment that we're living in such a difficult, complex psychological society where not only economical challenges are so clearly presented, but some psychological challenges. We have to adapt to this new world. We are forced to be more united. Indeed, we are not going to survive without having an open mind. And certain political issues, which are so hot now and so relevant, are presenting challenges in the diplomatic world. So there is invisible proportion between being diplomatic and yet to be truthful. And I wanted to give you a very sincere compliment. Your performance in CNN and many others, because by the way, Karen is a frequent guest on Fox and MSNBC and MGN TV, Chicago. I feel that you have this gift and a knowledge which have a very happy marriage, where in one sense you're very truthful, straightforward, but you diplomatically very correct as well. Your diplomacy only gaining from your truthfulness. And I wanted to ask you, how would you feel this agony of disproportion between finance and this astronomic dollar amount which takes to run political campaign can start to balance with some intellectual message where simple people can get more clarity what we're supposed to do, what we're supposed to expect from the government in changing this economic course?
I think that's a very valid question. And you know, from my perspective, there's an acronym called KISS, K-I-S-S, which says, keep it simple, stupid. And I am all for keeping everything simple because I think, like you said, we have so many things that we're juggling nowadays, that we cannot afford to have messages that are complex. We can't afford to have bills. We've got a bill in right now that passed in Congress, the Dodd-Frank bill, which is 4,500 pages long. I can't sit through a two-hour movie. You're telling me that anybody in Congress can tell you what's in every one of those 4,500 pages? There's no way. So if I were in charge, which I'm clearly not, but in case anybody's listening to me, I would go back to simplicity. I think that we have too many issues that are being lumped together. If we have an issue, we need to vote on those and debate those individually. One thing should have nothing to do with the other. Let's get the politics out of this and solve issues. And I would also make a proposal that you wouldn't have any laws or regulations that are more than 5 or 6 pages long. If you can't come up with a regulation and explain it to somebody in 5 or 6 pages, how are people supposed to understand it and to follow it? And I just don't think that it's fair, and I just don't think that it's consistent with where we are in our lives. We're overwhelmed. And so from my perspective, it is a time to go back to simple discussions, simple language, simple laws. Look, the government did this several years ago with the stock market. They had SEC regulation. They said, if you're going to do an IPO or raise money in the market, the document you put together can't have all this legal mumbo-jumbo in it. You need to write it in simple English. And so if the government is making companies do that for raising capital, they should be following their own advice and doing the same thing for the rules and regulations that we live by.
And this is such a clear answer and a vision, and I would only add to this, it will be so much easier for people who don't have sophistication of political education, who are not yet graduated from high school, because I believe that unless there will be much better, more profound connection with the younger generation and indeed political generation, we will be very stagnated. It is very important for young brain to comprehend and to be much, much more involved. And if it will be in a pamphlets, for example, with some clearer explanation as you suggesting, I think that the power of uniting this country will be much more present, much more natural. I think there is a lot of disconnection between certain groups and between the arguments of the principles of Democrats and Republicans, when indeed goals are very mutual. I think that simplicity will bring that unity of comprehension. I'd like to come back to your book for remaining moments. And I like very much to make a comment saying that this book is incredibly useful, so vital, so relevant for younger generation, because they're the one who are very idealistic. They're the one who don't have enough money sometimes to finish their education. That's where your book is coming in. You are picking up these missing links. And I wanted to ask you, did you have in mind particularly young population?
You know, I really didn't. I had a message that I wanted to make relevant to anybody, whether they were retiring and thinking about a second job, whether they were discontent with a current job or maybe couldn't find work, or whether they were out of college and looking at their options. I do think, just like we were talking about, that my ability to take complex ideas, boil them down very simply, and also try to make them funny and entertaining from time to time does usually resonate very well with the younger folks. So I spend a good amount of time speaking to college students and have a nice younger generation that gets behind the message. But again, I think it's just because of the style of communication. But in terms of my target, I really did feel that it was relevant to a whole bunch of different groups of people. I mean, there really were kind of all these different silos, all these different target markets that I had in mind. And as I said, it was just an important message that I wanted to get out there.
And I would say there are certainly enormous amount of respectful books regarding small businesses. In fact, you are very generous, and you mentioned some other authors. I think, if I am correct, you're talking about one of the very important book by Michael Gerber, and then you're talking about some other authors. But I personally found your book is absolutely the best for points we did talk about, and you even inspired me to create a little acronym of my own for the letters of the word best. I believe it's B, entrepreneurial, successful tool. And if you are, then you will be successful in business.
Love it. Love it.
Carol, there are just so many fantastic other ideas. Needless to say that you love of the dolls, and this is my passion, and some other sides of your just fantastic character, the fact that you're so young and so beautiful and so vibrant, all of this in harmony with your intellect and your bravery, your energy, your passion to be truthful and uncompromising and yet so expressive and kind. I'd like to deeply thank you for finding time in your, I would say, critically heavy schedule to remind our listeners that you're going to be again today on CNN. And I certainly will be listening to your comments and will be very much eagerly expecting another piece of your wisdom. I wanted to thank you again. And I do not need even to ask you to talk about your website, which is phenomenal world of business and wisdom. Everyone can find this. And I just wanted to thank you so much for being with
thank
us.
Thank you very, very much, Lena. I really appreciate you having me on. You're a fantastic interviewer, lots of very insightful questions, and very, very kind words about me. In fact, I may have to hire you as my publicist because I don't think anyone's ever said that many nice things about me at one time. So I'm very appreciative and appreciative of the opportunity to share with your listeners and look forward to connecting more, whether on the website, on Twitter, or on television.
And you absolutely melted my heart, my soul. I am extremely loyal to something which is dear to my mind. I thank you so much. Until very, very soon. And on this note, we will say goodbye to Carol Roth. And I will have my post thoughts, as usual, after having very, very special guests.